On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp. Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
Up the middle, and Escobar will drive in the first run of the game. Down the line, and a fair ball into the corner. It'll score two. Close to second with a two-run double, fair by inches. Deep in the hole and through. Two runs will score, and Hunter with a bleeder to left, and it's 5-0. The left center field slicing away from Holt, and that ball's going to hit the ground. And Rosario is safe at third. That's hit to right. Susan Hall going back to the wall, and it's gone. How's that for a pick-me-up?
How is that for a pick-me-up? Good morning, everybody. Welcome to On Deck Radio, along with producer David Helmer and, of course, Sam Ekstrom sitting in for Gene Larkin. I am Pete Wagner, and plenty of Twins baseball to talk about in this program. We'll talk about that, take a look at a little bit of the national scene, and then we'll be hearing from Eden Prairie head coach Scott Hackett. His team is one of the final four teams in the Central Plains Regional of the American Legion baseball tournament. To go to Shelby, North Carolina, Sam, and I don't know if you've had a chance to see much of the Legion baseball product over the recent years, but the state tournament and the things that we've done on the LegionBaseballHub.com have been absolutely awesome. You'd be shocked at the numbers that website's delivering right now. People are into it.
I'm not familiar, as familiar as I should be with it, Pete, and thanks for having me on, by the way. But you'll have to tell me, who are the other three teams in that Final Four?
Rapid City, South Dakota, whom Eden Prairie plays tonight at 8 o'clock. You can hear that, by the way, on that website. We've got a link to it from Rapid City's a call for that. That'll be great. And then there's Creighton Prep, kind of known as the, quote, cheaters. Did I say that?
No, I didn't hear it.
Okay,
no.
That's out of Nebraska, the Omaha area there, I believe, or Lincoln. Lincoln, I think it is. But the deal with that is, you know, usually it's a school district domicile which feeds the Legions. There's two teams in Legion baseball, one in Ohio and that one, where it seems to be there's more. It's sort of an all-star team. So it'd be like take the South Hennepin American Legion League, which would be Wyzetta and Eden Prairie, funny, who are both there. And then you take Edina, you take Hopkins, Bloomington Gold, Bloomington Blue, Chester Bird, which is Benilde St. Margaret's and St. Louis Park, and say, let's make an all-star team and go get after it. So these community-based teams are doing very well. Creighton Prep has one loss. They lost to Rapid City earlier. So if they lose today against, follow me here, Omaha, Millard, South, they're out. If Eden Prairie wins, then they have a one-game showdown because the team they're playing against would have one loss. If they lose, they're out, and then the team that's left to play Rapid City, who hasn't lost, would have to beat them twice.
So what I'm hearing from you is there's a Legion baseball conspiracy. That's what I'm hearing.
No, it's just what you're hearing is it's everywhere. You know, right when you think it's a level playing field, and I didn't want to make it about that, but I'm just saying that our clubs all are doing very well against teams where it's just one of those ones where you scratch the chin and you say, hey now, how do they get that kind of boundaries and those sort of things? And I'd love to look into that a little bit further and find out what that's really all about. But they're a very good baseball team. Why is that a magical campaign? I think they finished 36-14 on the season. Won the state tournament against Eden Prairie. We're 5-0 in it. We're very good. And they've got a number of players that just did not say die. They refused to quit. They beat Eden Prairie twice in their last two outings. However, Eden Prairie won 7-6 last night to ouster Wyzetta after leading 7-0 after the top of the sixth. It was dicey.
That's good baseball. And you love that there is, another level of baseball during these summer months. So much good baseball being played. I mean, between the Legion, you've got the Saints, you've got, the Twins, and granted they're in free fall, but it's good time.
How good are the Saints right now?
Saints are unbelievable. I believe they are, is it 56-13, 57-13? They just completed another sweep. They started the season, I believe, a month after the Twins or after Major League Baseball, and they've got as many wins or as close to some of the best teams in the American League.
It's scary. And you know what the weird part is? They got another team that's right breathing up their throats. Is it Sioux Falls or Sioux City that is right in there with the same wins in a different division? So I think the playoff scene is going to be very interesting with that. You mentioned the Twins being in free fall. They do beat the Cleveland Indians 10-9, but not after having a very comfortable 6-0 lead. Watch that dissipate to a 9-6 deficit. I think the thing is if you give Mike Pelfrey a lead, you might as well just kiss it goodbye and say so long. Big, I mean, it's a joke.
No, Big Pelf has been rough. Hasn't won a game since June 7th, Pete. June 7th. And I was totally on the Pelfrey bandwagon early on in this experiment with Pelfrey because I thought, hey, this was a promising pitcher in his late 20s who, you know, is coming off an injury. This could be a good deal at a cheap price.
Yeah,
and he proved some good things early in the season. I think he had he was part of that big May. I mean, hey, he won 4 or 5 games in the month of May.
Was shut down. Was very good.
Has been prone to very large blow up innings, much like we saw last night in the third, giving up the 4 runs and just letting the wheels come off. He's not locating his pitches. He seems to have lost some velocity, and he's not using the leverage that you should have when you're a pitcher of his height. It seems like he's hunched over on the mound, which I've never really been fond of with his style.
That all looks like confidence to me from what you're saying. He's not tall from a throwing perspective, and you know we're kind of breaking down mechanics here. But along with that comes the meltdown inning. So your club posts a 6 spot. Your job is very simple. Make them beat you and put up a 0 and then go back to work and keep the momentum. You could just feel the sag that was going on there, Sam. I mean, this was like, oh, God, here we go again. You know, they lost 5 in a row coming into that. The last show that I was on, the Twins were 52-45, or last week they were 52-45, something like that. They had a 3-game cushion on Toronto. They go in there and get absolutely pathetically broomed, and then it looked like, okay, well, here's a nice start in Cleveland. We're back to the Central Division teams, the Detroits, Chicago's, and Cleveland's that this team can beat up, maybe not Kansas City. But you got to have better outing than that. And I know that's going to be part of the 5 questions, so I'm not going to go too hard on that part. But the things that stood out to me, though, was the facts that Hicks and Hunter each pick up 3 hits. And I think Aaron Hicks is he's created a major problem in the center field position, really. I mean, he's starting to look like the player I think they believed he could have been when they didn't trade him in 2010 for Cliff Lee.
Oftentimes the Twins are criticized for being too patient. This is one case where I think we can applaud the Twins for being patient with Aaron Hicks because he's shown that he can be a viable major league hitter, not only a defensive player, but also a threat at the plate from both sides of the plate, too. All his hits coming from the left side last night. He's got the second highest OBP on the team behind Miguel Sano. And you hope that he doesn't get stuck in a cramped outfield situation because, you know, next year you're going to have Buxton probably healthy. Buxton competing for a spot. Rosario's been great. He'll be competing for a spot. And do you bring Hunter back? That's the question you have because I think Hicks fits in right field.
I think you have to because I think when you, you know, I think I've said from the outset of the show, and David, you were here from show number one back in March, right?
Yep.
I felt as though 81-81 would be a huge victory for this team and a step in the right direction to getting to a viable playoff team. So let's pretend, okay, fine, come back to reality with the 5-game skid, but this is a team that can win 5 in a row too. They've done it. But the fact is Torrey Hunter is the one that is probably shaved 15 to maybe 20 losses off this team's roster, in my opinion. Just as far as leadership, I mean, he's almost at 20 home runs. Give me a break. The guy's like 90 years old, and he's still going yard. It's incredible. Did you see that opposite field blast? That was amazing.
Amazing power at a time when the team absolutely needed it. When the wheels were coming off, I mean, I was typing up my eulogy last night, Pete. I was going to come in here with a long diatribe, putting the Twins to rest, and then Hunter brings them back from the dead with that ninth inning home run. And, you know, people have overlooked, I think, he's on pace for his lowest batting average and on-base percentage of his career, but the run production has absolutely been terrific. He's on pace for 90 RBIs. He's on pace for something like 25 home runs. Got the most home runs in any season for him since 2011. I mean, he's really flexed some 40-year-old muscle here in the last couple months.
I'm going to go ahead and pat myself on the back for last night's call. When I saw the lineup, Torii Hunter was in the hitting second coming into that inning. I just stared at the TV and said, all right, this is where Torii Hunter does something.
Sprained shoulder.
Didn't
he just
that.
Sprained it right now.
Ouch.
Patting it on the back.
Oh,
good effort.
So bad.
Hey, could you hear the popping? On the Hicks side of things, he leads the Twins in batting average out of players with 200 or more at-bats at 285. I think when we think about the things where he was at last year, the things even guys like Dan Gladden were trying to work with him and talk to him about approach to the game and the day-to-day things like that. We've heard him say many times that he felt as though being sent down really helped him this year, and it really got his head in the right direction. And no longer, I think, does the PGA look like an option for Aaron Hicks.
What do you think about Hicks leading off with Dozier batting second? I'm a huge fan of putting Dozier lower in the order, because look at the garbage that's been batting in front of Dozier all year. You've had Suzuki and you've had Santana not getting on base, and then Dozier comes up, but the base is empty.
He just went straight garbage can there. That's one of the questions out of the next segment for the
if
first
you want
question.
To touch a little bit more on Dozier, because I know we talked about where he should be hitting. We talked about it like a month ago, and I think he's a picture-perfect two-hole guy. The way he gets so many extra base hits, he's that guy that's going to hit 250 to 260, get somebody on base in front of him so you can use some of those doubles and home runs.
I agree, but he seems so comfortable in the leadoff spot. I would almost hit Hicks 9.
No. I think,
leadoff.
Yeah, but I think you want Hicks' speed setting the table. I mean,
correct. Setting the table in the first inning, no. But setting the table in 2 through 9, yes. So I feel like he would be the precursor to what was in front of him that we weren't comfortable with. This guy, you know, he's 9 of 12 in stolen bases right now. Aaron Hicks is, so he's been very effective in that category too. He can knock in some runs. He's got 20 so far. So I think the weird part is it seems to me his highest level of productivity. We're just going to swipe off question one here because we're there of 5 questions. But I think his highest level of productivity has been actually, Sam, Dave, in the middle of the lineup.
They batted him 7th a couple times, and it worked pretty well.
Yeah,
he had a couple good games against Toronto and Seattle. I feel like Hicks is becoming a mature enough hitter that you can plug him in wherever, and he's probably going to be relatively productive. He's shown patience, which is key.
Yeah.
Because then you can trust him at the top of the order, and like you said, you could put him toward the bottom and then turn things over. I just wonder, once Buxton comes into the fold, you know, Buxton probably shapes up as either a 1 or a 9 hitter as well. So then Hicks would maybe fit in the middle, like you said.
So his defense, Aaron Hicks' defense is so good, and I think he is so sure of that, and he knows it, that it's really fed the bat as well, and then whatever's worked with the outfield between, I think I love the 3 they've got right now. I think it's a perfect blend with Rosario, Hicks, and Hunter. I mean, that's a good outfield. I mean, it's a solid defensive outfield that can hit, knocking in some runs. It's the best outfield we've had here in this market in some time. I mean, in maybe 4 or 5 years. So, when you bring the Buxton factor in, I just don't know where people go. And I'm just so from this, I just need to see more from the health department for Byron Buxton. I am not ready to hand the keys over to center field to him yet. Right now, it's Aaron Hicks's to lose. I don't care what his hype is or was.
Well, Buxton hasn't been in the clear health-wise in the last 3 years.
That's my concern.
And while I don't think these injuries are necessarily chronic, because they're so freaky. I mean, the slide, the collision. I mean, these are things that are correctable, and they're things that are kind of once in a blue moon. They're not exactly, a chronic knee injury like Anthony Barr has right now with the Vikings.
Ooh, that's a whole topic for tonight. Talk to you. By the way, be sure to check out our pregame show from Lowertown at CHS Field, presented by Eric's Heating and Air. We'll be there covering all aspects of Saints baseball. And of course, you'll be joining us at 5:15 to talk Vikings football and that topic. But my concern with Hicks is, with Buxton is, yes, those are freak incidents, but it is 3 years in a row. and he has not been in the clear. And I begin to wonder if it is correctable, because he plays with a reckless abandon. I get it, and it's a part of the package. But boy, oof, you know, Joe Mauer got injury riddled here basically from 2010-ish to 11 on, and people are all over him. And you know, I think it's just being 6'5" and being a catcher, which is a demanding position, that's caught up to him.
When Buxton came up, I was a little bit caught off guard with how awkward things were for him. You know, he tripped over his own feet rounding second base, seemed a little uncoordinated, though fast, but almost out of control. It's like he hasn't grown into his body yet. He's not comfortable with all the movements. Maybe that'll help him along the way once he gets a little more coordinated.
And with each level of baseball that you go up, the game gets faster.
That's true.
And I think what he was trying to do was be at that pace and then some.
He's an awkward teenager. He'll figure it out.
Well, I just think there's some time we need to take here for that. I mean, I think we're rushing things. I'm not in charge of personnel, and I don't pretend to be. It's just observations here from On Deck Radio. Fair?
Fair enough.
We'll be back with more right after this.
I think Pringle's initial intention was to make tennis balls. But on the day that the rubber was supposed to show up, a big truckload of potatoes arrived. And Pringle said, what the hell? Cut him up.
Where'd you pull that from?
Some classic Mitch Hedberg. I know he has a joke about playing Little League, and I was trying to find that, but I ran into the Pringles joke.
So you gave up on that and you went straight Pringles.
Might as well go with the Pringles joke. It's a classic.
Brandon Warren joins the fray. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good. You came in just in time along with Sam Ekstrom and Pete Wagner, David Helmer behind the board. Of course, getting the job done. There's nobody better. You're good at that. You know that?
Yeah, I know how to push buttons.
That's correct. Well,
you're pushing our buttons, David.
I know an ex-host who used to do this for whose buttons you really pushed.
Oh, yeah.
Fair?
Yeah. Why not?
Five questions. You got some beauties here. Should we bring him in on question number one? We were sort of touching on it at the end of the first segment.
We might as well, and then just get a definitive answer from each of you.
Okay, go ahead. So throw it out
there. Aaron Hicks, how he's been batting up and down the lineup. You see him hitting second. You see him hitting seventh. Where do you think he fits best?
I like him batting leadoff, just because then you move Brian Dozier down, and then somebody told me it was like 15 or 16 of 24 home runs for Dozier have been solo home runs. That's a byproduct of leading off with terrible bottom of the order guys in front of him. If you bat him, that is Hicks, leadoff, move Dozier down to second, third, change it up a little bit. I think you have a chance to inject more offense into the same production. Like you're shuffling deck chairs in a way to not have to bring somebody in, but still add offense.
How about this? I propose that you leave Dozier in the leadoff slot, because I think most of his productivity over his career, it's odd. His power numbers, it's because he's hit there a lot. I get that. But his power numbers have been so good there. Why not hit Hicks 9, because really he's the new leadoff once innings 2 through 9 come up?
I think Dozier just reinvented himself as a result of being in the big leagues for however long he was. And I don't know that batting leadoff is necessarily a byproduct of that, or if it's of him coming of age in the big leagues. But the issue for me then, if you bat Hicks 9th, is then you're basically saying he gets the fewest plate appearances over a long term.
And right now he's your leading hitter with guys with over 200 at-bats.
Yeah, so for me, if that's the way you want to go with it, then I just go Hicks, Dozier at the top. I don't know. I put Mauer in between them. I like the idea of Mauer batting with a guy on first base a lot, because then you open up
too.
That first and second base hole. Again, Mauer's in a funk too, so you got to find a way to get him out of that. So I'm not sure what the answer is there.
Let's go to Sam here on this one. Do we get concerned? I mean, is Aaron Hicks completely turned the corner to the perspective where he can lead off? Because we knew what the leadoff experience was for him last year.
I think Hicks had to get to the point in his career where he proved to himself that he could do it. You get in your own head at some point. When you start your career 2 for 56, there's got to be some psychological barriers that you have to cross. And he experienced a huge slump second time he tried it at the big league level. He changed his swing, got things squared away. If you really want to hear about the swing, Brandon, you wrote a great piece for Cold Omaha a couple months ago about how Aaron Hicks completely revitalized that swing during spring training. But I fully agree with what you said, Brandon. put him at the top, get him in front of Dozier, and get some people on base for Dozier, who's an extra base hit machine. 29 doubles on the year, 23 home runs, 3 triples. I believe by my California math, that's 55.
Oh, no Minnesota math. I say then, I'm such a feel guy, personally. I like where Dozier's at. I have a hard time personally pulling him. It's not that we need to see Hicks be there. I have a hard time pulling him out of the leadoff spot because it's working for him.
Do you have a problem betting Hicks second then?
No. Right there, perfect.
That's fine, too. I mean, I don't think you can make
I think that's formidable right there. That's where I would go.
It's your two best hitters that are making contact, right? I mean, you can say Sano is their best power hitter, doesn't make quite enough contact to, of course, ever bat at the top of the order. But with those two, with Sano, with Plouffe, with Mauer, 1 through 5, and then you're still not even tapping into Eddie Rosario or Torrey Hunter yet. That's a really solid 1 through 7.
It's a good lineup.
It really is.
While we were in the first segment, I was talking about the outfield here. I think it's as good of an outfield right now with Rosario, Hicks, and Hunter as we've seen in 5-6 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, and again, that might be for lack of competition, but it's they go catch the baseball, which
that's what
for
I
this
like.
Pitching staff, with even in the bullpen with guys like Glenn Perkins and Casey Fien, who rely a lot on fly balls, that goes under the radar because when they start chasing down...
That are sailing out of the park?
Well, that too. But when they start chasing down fly balls that you know would have dropped with the Willinghams and Arcias in the corner, that's huge. Because those turn into extra base hits. That's where the damage comes from. When you're not fielding ground balls, you can get singled to death. When you're not fielding fly balls, it's doubles and triples.
Speaking of pitching...
All right, I know you're salivating over this one. Mike Pelfrey had his most successful run as a Twin earlier on this year, but he's kind of really resorted back to what he's done the first couple of years in a Minnesota uniform, so flat out, here it is. Are you sick of him?
What do you mean, am I? How about I was before we started? No, where I get lost in this whole process is you're offered a big league job out of camp and a meeting to be traded when you're sent to the bullpen because the people making these decisions knew exactly what was going to happen, which is this. And I'm sorry, guys, I can't deal with a 6-0 lead that has just melted away just at the bat of an eye. And you watch the body language and you watch the huffing and the puffing and it's just the same thing over and over and over again. I don't know why he was even re-signed, but then he had the nerve to go in and say this and then come back out and say it was a good productive conversation. Yeah, because you got what you wanted. You got to be back in the rotation, and now look at you.
Do you think it's absolutely pathetic. Do you think he went into the clubhouse after the game mad at the hitters, saying, well, if you're going to score 10 runs, why didn't you do it all in the third?
I'm sure it's great enough. But my perspective is you know what? If you're given a job in this league, you shut up, you take it, and you execute. By God, if you go and take what you got and complain for, and you don't do it, and you basically take a leak down your leg, get out of here.
Let's not act like this is a vested veteran who's coming off of 3 fantastic seasons. Look at what happened in Washington with Doug Fister, who's a free agent at the end of the year. He has a ton to lose at this point in terms of contract, and they put him in the bullpen for this young kid, Joe Ross, who's Tyson Ross's brother. Now, with Pelfrey, look at the numbers, the sheer numbers. You know I love the numbers. Going into June, 2.77 ERA.
Awesome.
And in the 12 starts since, 5.01 ERA, 32 strikeouts in 70 innings, 21 walks, 812 OPS against. That just isn't going to cut it. There's no reason. And here's what I don't understand. Why you send Trevor May, who's got 5 years left of club control, to the bullpen at the expense of a potential malcontent veteran who's a free agent at season's end, and there's got to be virtually no chance they re-sign him. Plus, his stuff would play up in the bullpen. I'm puzzled.
I'm 100% with you on that.
I want to play devil's advocate just for a moment here. I wasn't completely disenchanted with that decision to put May in the bullpen because what do you need most right now in the bullpen? You need a power arm in that setup role. The Twins bullpen has the lowest K per 9 innings of any team in baseball, and it's not even close. There's like a full strikeout difference between the 29th team Detroit and the 30th team Minnesota. So it makes sense to put May, someone you can count on to strike some guys out in that 8th inning role. And at the time of that decision, Pelfrey hadn't entered collapse mode yet. He wasn't completely falling off the cliff.
It was quaking.
It was quaking, but I think it was justifiable, at least, that you keep someone in the rotation, keep him appeased, and prevent that malcontent at the time.
And here's my issue, and look at the last 4 years. To me, the first six innings are more important than any one inning on the back end, and the last 4 years prove that. With a bad rotation and a pretty good bullpen, you can be a really terrible team. With a pretty good rotation and a bad bullpen, you can be a really good team like the Twins were at the beginning of this season. I think that the Twins need to address that back end of the bullpen stuff, but it has to come from somewhere other than your best rotation arm. And I think that's what Trevor May was in the first three, 4 months of the year.
I will say this. You feel pretty good when he comes out there late in the game because you know he's going to get the job done. You do.
Here's my question.
So I kind of like him there. But where is he more valuable, Trevor May?
Is he closer right now to returning to the rotation or becoming the closer?
Future closer.
Honestly, right now, let's say Glenn Perkins gave up that lead last night and he goes on the DL for an injury. I'm doing the air quotes.
An elbow impingement.
Yeah, let's just say that. Is Trevor May closer to becoming your closer than he is getting back into the rotation?
I like that idea.
Can Alex Meyer jump into that role? Because fatigue has been one of his problems. He can't pitch too many innings before he tires out.
If he were rolling like he
should.
He
goes into May's role and May goes into the closer role.
If all things are equal and his stuff is doing what it's supposed to, which I haven't looked at the AAA stats in a while. I know he was not rolling well once he got back down there.
I think May winds back up in the rotation.
I hope so.
I don't take my word as gospel, but with Pelfrey definitely coming off the books, and you don't know what you're going to get with Malone. You don't know what you're going to have with Ricky Nolasco. You never know what you're going to have with Nolasco. I mean, they won't have as much depth. I don't think next year. I mean, obviously the Jose Berrios is a question mark as well. But I
Cole
think
it's, Stewart. No, not Cole Stewart. Who's the other guy that they're going to bring up?
Well, Tyler Duffy.
Tyler
again.
Duffy. That's what I mean.
Yeah, he's obviously struggled, but he's got a big league arm.
Yep.
I think it's going to be, again, in spring training next year, you know, a fair fight to get those spots. And I think May, just knowing what he can do, is probably going to win it. He's probably going to be the fourth starter next year.
Let's go with number five real quick.
What's number five?
Question number five.
Okay,
I
got it. So, we've got a healthy dose of Roy Smalley and Jack Morris this year because Bert is only doing 100 games. So, who do you want riding shotgun with Dick Bremer? Who's your favorite of the three?
Go.
Roy Smalley. He's got more insight. And he gets a little wordy at times or he'll stumble over his words because he'll start down a road and then he'll realize he's not really going someplace. But his insights
are... He's friendly, too.
He is great. His insights are invaluable. Jack kind of has like this cliche machine where if you were to like push a sound bar, move their feet, getting comfortable at the plate. And it's just like, okay.
Well, Bert does too at the major league.
That's the other thing
too. At the major league level.
Yeah. So I think. Somebody I read on Twitter, somebody said that that Jack was a utility player whose flaws are magnified in full-time duty.
Who do you like?
Smalley. And it's not even close. I think Morris makes a lot of statements that are way too elementary and not always accurate sometimes. I mean, he'll throw out a stat that he's taking off the top of his head that
you guys are tough.
I can immediately say is incorrect. Smalley, I'm a little persnickety here because I work in play-by-play and I know what a bad color guy is like. Sometimes Smalley forgets that silence is okay on a broadcast. You don't always need to fill the space. So he does get a little wordy, like you said, but his insights, I think, are better than Bert and Jack combined.
In 30 seconds before the break, here's how I see it. I find them all with good entertainment value. Bert clearly has the highest entertainment value of anybody. There's a built-in tension between he and that man. You can feel that tension a little bit between Bert and Dick Bremer, which I appreciate and like, and I like the feel of it. Roy has such great insights from the offensive side of the plate and also from the defensive side, which I think is incredibly helpful. And then with Jack, he's got that kind of bulldog mentality as a player and as an approach to the game. And I also like how he comes at it as well. What I do know is when you bring in ex-players, you're not getting broadcast professionals. So I will take what I can get with all three of them. But if I had to go like this and take it, I would take Bert right now just because I love that tension.
Interesting take.
It makes it entertaining for me.
This debate will continue into the break, I'm
It'll
sure.
rage on. We'll be back. Scott Hackett from Eden Prairie American Legion coming up right around the bend.
We'll be right back.
Working Man for you.
Had to throw it in.
Do you know the story behind this song, guys?
Do not.
This song was John Rutsey on the great late John Rutsey on drums. This song was actually really took off in Cleveland, the Twins' opponent today. And it became huge around the Cleveland radio station. So Rush kind of went over the border and started kind of working the Ohio Valley region there. And that's really where they took off. I think it was 1973.
I thought the Cleveland song was a Wild Thing.
This is Cleveland's anthem right here, Working Man.
It's good to know.
How about that? A little industrial action going on. Can you see the smokestacks, the whole deal?
Yeah, good vibe.
Very Pittsburgh.
Fits the culture.
Very Pittsburgh-esque.
I thought it was the opening tune to Drew Carey's show.
Which one?
Cleveland Rocks.
The Price is Right.
Hello, yeah, hello, Cleveland. Best movie ever. Scott Hackett from Eden Prairie. His team is one of Final Four in the American Legion Central Plains playoffs in Bismarck, North Dakota. Good morning to you, Scott. Thanks for joining On Deck Radio here today.
Good morning, Pete. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So your team, do I dare say, survives yesterday? 7-0 lead kind of dissipated there toward the end of the game.
Yeah, that would be an accurate term for yesterday's game. You know, we got off to a great start and, you know, unfortunately couldn't kind of put the game away when we had some chances. And credit Wyzetta for battling and staying in there. And, yeah, got a little nerve-wracking at the end. But, you know, our young pitcher, Zach Zigan, came in and shut it down.
You guys have seen a ton of Wyzetta over the past week or two. Were you sick of him yet?
No, you know, I get along well with Adam, and it was good. It'll be good to see a different opponent than Wyzetta. You know, three times in less than a week is a little more than you like to see a team. But you know, they're a great team. They battled us every time. You know, we were fortunate to come out with the victory yesterday.
This, of course, not your first rodeo when it comes to Central Plains regional action for American Legion Baseball, as you're a four-time champion there. Off to the World Series, you've gone with this club, and the Eden Prairie has been so solid over the years. Thoughts on what needs to happen against a Rapid City team that you played earlier this year? I believe they won that game 5-2. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah. You know, Rapid City is a very well-coached team. They don't beat themselves. They play the game hard. You know, for us to be successful today, we just got to be ready to go, and we need to, you know, kind of not get too wrapped up into what the game is, and just go kind of play our style of baseball and take care of the ball defensively and you know, get some good pitching like we've been getting this week, and just kind of keep that that level approach for nine innings. There's a lot of ups and downs, there's going to be adversity at some point. It's just how you handle that. And, as long as we can handle that, we'll be successful.
We're speaking with Scott Hackett, the head coach of Eden Prairie. American Legion playoffs continue Central Plains style. If they come out of that, they head off to Shelby, North Carolina for another World Series bid. And, if you could, if you're willing to share with us, who is, your starter on the bump today?
Today we're going to Trevor Davinsky. He'll be getting the start. He's fully rested off the state tournament and ready to go.
He had a great 5-inning outing in relief against Wyzetta, that 12-inning affair. So, and that was back on Monday. So, yeah, you've gotten a full week's rest out of him. What can we see out of him? What kind of a pitcher is he?
Trevor's one of those guys who's, just grabs the ball and comes back at the hitter every time. So he works at a good pace. He attacks the hitter. He's not somebody that tries to nibble. You know, he's going to come at him with a hard fastball. You know, and when he was working ahead, he's pretty successful, and he's pitched really well for us this summer. He didn't get an opportunity to pitch in the spring with an injury, but he's come back strong this summer, and we're expecting him to come out and give us a good performance today.
Your middle infield was really productive at the plate yesterday. Josh Miller, of course, had the double, the home run. He was 3-for-4. Josh Liberico was 2-for-3, scored a pair of runs as well. Liberico handles the bat so well in so many different situations. And, you know, Miller, of course, we know had that little hip injury back in the state tournament. I think it was on Sunday. Ended up resting him on the championship game and put the big fella, Athey, at shortstop. How is Miller? Apparently he's still flying balls out of the park, even if he is a little nicked.
he's looking good. He's moving a lot better. I know it's still kind of bothering him a little bit, but he's not letting it affect his play at all. He's been pretty solid for us these first couple games. And as you mentioned, Josh Liberko, he's not only been handling the bat well, but made a lot of big plays defensively for us, and had a couple yesterday too. To kind of, you know, when we were having some of the turbulence there late in the game, he made a couple of big plays for us. So those two have been pretty solid, and they'll need to continue to be solid for us this week.
Can you talk a little bit about Tyler Safgren? He won the Kent Herbeck Award for the South Hennepin American Legion MVP. Obviously the MVP of your team as well. Really solid hitting catcher who's so defensively sound, but he also brings so many more intangibles to your clubhouse and your dugout from the perspective of just leadership and keeping everybody in the game and those kinds of things. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, Tyler, I can't say enough about the job he's done this year. And you know, like you said, he is a leader. He's not a real vocal leader, but mm-hmm. he's one of those guys that just goes out and puts everything on the line every game. And, you know, he plays a demanding position, and he's been getting beat up and nicked up all week. And, you know, it's been a grind, him having to catch every game in the state tournament and every game here. And, you wouldn't know it by the way he's performing and the way he carries himself. He just, it just helps the other guys when they can see what he's dealing with and the, you know, the shots he's taking behind the plate and still getting up and performing, offensively too for us that, you know, that kind of helps the rest of the guys just kind of realize that what's on the line and they're matching that intensity as well.
I see your third baseman, Jeff Athey, is still getting hit by pitches, which is a good sign. That means he hasn't backed off the plate any. You know what was interesting to me in the state tournament? Two home runs that he hit to left center were just Joe Mauer-esque. It looked like the teams were trying to really not come in on him and pitch him away, and he just flicked his wrists and fired it off. I mean, it was gorgeous inside-out swinging there. Can you talk about the ability where you see this big fella like that, and you think he's going to clear it out off the inside corner and yank it down the line guy, but he uses all fields for a guy exiting his junior year into his senior year in high school. He handles the bat very well.
He does, and you know, and I think when Jeff is hitting his best, he is going gap to gap and hitting that left center field gap as well. At that, you know, it's typically when he's seeing pitches well and staying on the ball, that's kind of where he's working. And he's a strong enough kid to be able to lift him out of the yard on some of those pitches. And, you know, teams with his size want to come inside on him, you know, but, you know, they can't miss, you know, over the plate. So that's why he's getting hit a little bit more frequently lately. You know, and then when they do try to go away from him, he has the ability to go the other way with it, with some power too. So, he's been on a pretty good roll and is a very good hitter, and we'll need him to continue that.
By the way, I'd like to thank all of our listeners. I've just was given a number. It's very large. Thank you that have come over from legionbaseballhub.com to check out this interview with Scott Hackett from Eden Prairie. The passion for this game, I think, you know, Brandon Warren, you're in here. You're a former Legion player. You understand what it's about. And I think it's as loved as town ball. It just hasn't been communicated.
Yeah, I think it's just a pure love to guys showing up hour and a half, 2 hours before the game, hitting in the cage.
Oh, I was talking to Brandon Warren. Sorry about that. Okay, we got you now.
These guys getting that early, hitting in the cage, hanging out at the field, and just being buddies. You know, it's before you go off to college. You still got limited responsibility. Yeah. And so baseball is just what you do for the summer. You might have a part-time job. And I know when I was, you know, the summer for me, it was like I wanted to get to the field as early as possible and hit on the field. We'd have the keys to the lights so we could hit at midnight if we wanted to in such a small town. So Legion Baseball, it's pure and it's awesome. And I just love to hear the coach talk about it.
It is great. Scott Hackett again from Eden Prairie. Your team, you know, I mean, obviously you don't want to say this is an elimination game and that type of thing because they know what this means. But where are they at mentally? I mean, do you feel like they're pretty comfortable and have confidence that they can get the job done today?
Yeah, you know, like I said a few times, these guys are a pretty resilient bunch. They're a great group of guys. They get along well together. You know, it's great being on the road with them because, you know, they just like being together. They like hanging out together and, you know, they're in this together. You know, there's been no, you know, kind of griping or complaining or any of that going on during any of the games. There's, you know, we've had a little bit of adversity in every game and they've hung together And they just have that belief in one another, and that's what, you know, they have the confidence that they can get this done. You know, we've had a very good season to this point, and you know, we need three more victories to extend the season to another week.
So you do need three more victories. If you win today, Creighton Prep has lost, correct? They lost to Rapid City.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And then on the same token, has Omaha or Millard South, they've lost too, correct?
Correct, yeah. So those two are playing at 5 o'clock today in an elimination game. And if we beat Rapid City tonight, we would play the winner of that game in the first game tomorrow.
And then you'd have to do that, and then Rapid City would have their first loss. Then you'd have, there's your three right there.
Yep.
Okay, well, we brought up Creighton Prep at the start of the hour, and I got a text that came across, and they appreciated a little bit of the jab that came out. Now, they aren't necessarily like an Eden Prairie, a Wayzata, or an Edina, that type of thing, or Moundsview, or whatever it is, or you know, Tri-City Red. They draw kids from a little bit of a different area, don't they?
Yeah, they get, you know, I think they're primarily Omaha kids. You know, but being a private school, they pull in you know, kids that maybe aren't all in the same, you know, geographical location.
Gotcha.
You know, but yeah, they've been you know, they've been a powerhouse in Nebraska over the last handful of years. They've been the last few regionals we've been at. They've been at, so there's a familiarity there between the two programs.
I've heard they're a very good ball club. Coach, by the way, your game can be linked to and heard on the LegionBaseballHub.com tonight. 8 o'clock start, correct?
Correct, yes, 8 o'clock start. And thanks for all the you know, the communication, the publicity that you guys are giving Legion Baseball. And this guy's, you know, I hear from parents and fans back home about how much accessibility they're getting due to the Legion Hub, and we're thankful for that.
Much appreciated, Scott. It's been a blast working. And by the way, if you want to check out more about this Eden Prairie team, eplegionbaseball.com. Is that correct? Is that what it is? I should know, too.
Yep.
Okay. If there's somebody like going through my head. eplegionbaseball.com. Scott, have a great day. Good luck to you. We'll be following you closely tonight.
All right. Thanks, Pete. I appreciate it.
You bet. Scott Hackett, one of the great guys in Legion baseball and coaching. He, of course, is an assistant coach at Eden Prairie High School throughout the season as well. More baseball. Boy, we've got a full, this is a full list of things to talk about, Dave Helmer.
Yeah, we got two segments to cram into one.
We're going to make it happen.
Why not?
We'll be back right after this. Here we go, folks. Do we need to play this, or are we going to not stop believing?
I've already stopped, I think.
Did you even start?
No.
I know you didn't.
Probably
How
not
about
fair,
you?
But yeah.
You got sucked in for a little bit.
Yeah, I got sucked in, but I was waiting for the other shoe to drop the whole time.
I think we all have.
It was sucked out of me when A-Rod hit three home runs. That was the emotional turning point of the season.
Was that worse than John Ryan Murphy taking Glenn Perkins deep Oppo for his second big league home run in that same game?
That was the worst.
Oh, my goodness.
I can live with a three because it's A-Rod and it's what he does. But that was brutal.
Or as Tom Schreier would call him, John David Booty hit the home run.
I said John Ryan Murphy assassinated that baseball on Twitter because the three names, the assassins.
Yeah, I was like Lee Harvey.
Perfect. I thought that was pretty clutch.
How did you take What are we thinking there? So, Glenn Perkins, can we go there for a minute?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously got the job done last night. What happens there? I mean, I know you're not going to be 42 of 42 on a year or whatever it would be. And, you know, what is he, 28 of 28 at the time, right? But for me, it's almost like he kind of gets into these, I don't know if it's a dead arm phases, but he kind of is very hittable. And I don't think he's overpowering enough to have any lapses in his command and his fastball.
Well, he tries to be overpowering. He's not a finesse pitcher. He's a power pitcher,
but
to locate. Well, that's his MO. That's what he tries to be, a well-located fastball. It can be unhittable. You know, if you can throw it 95 and put it where you want it, that's tough to hit. That's how Perkins got by for those first 28 saves. But he doesn't have a whole lot of junk. I mean, he's not going to give you like a Mariano Rivera cutter. He's got a good changeup. He's got a good fastball. And if he's not locating, he's grooving. His fastball is pretty straight. It's not moving a whole lot. It's not tailing at the end. And in the Pittsburgh game, in the New York game, and in the Seattle game, these are pitchers that he's just grooving. And teams have to an extent, kind of figured out what Perkins does. You know, he's going to make a couple mistakes here and there, and when he does, they've been ready for it.
He said that Bulldog mentality dating back to the days at the U of M, and even as a starter, you know, we were talking about that 12-win season he had where he didn't strike anybody out, but he was a Bulldog. He wasn't afraid to pitch inside. He still does that sort of thing. The big pitch for him that I think may be lagging right now is the slider, and if that's not going,
I would agree.
Yeah, if that pitch is not going, if it's flattening out for him, that's an issue. Now, did you guys see the pitch he rung up Jerry Sands on to end the game? It was a slider, and it was right down the middle, and it looked like Kurt Suzuki was catching it with oven mitts. Like, he just kind of, like, wrapped his hand around it and framed it so it looked like it was an outside pitch, and Pitch Effect is like, nope, that's right down the middle. And it was just like...
Well, it was almost like Suzuki was expecting it to be over there.
Or a fastball. Or he was crossed up. I mean, you don't know what was going on.
I think the hitter was crossed up, too.
Absolutely.
Because that was a cookie.
Yeah, that was nasty. He froze, and it was pretty good.
Interesting today, Santana and Bauer go tonight. Hughes and Kluber tomorrow. That's going to be a tough matchup for Hughes, who's been really still getting a tip. But before we jump off the Perkins wagon, if you take the games, what is it, five games that he's been a part of over the course of the past couple of, since the All-Star break, that looked like they could have been wins that turned into losses, that's painful. I mean, so it's... It's not as though this club is 150% imploded, and it was the bullpen that had kind of sort of strung things together. The starting pitching got to the sixth inning and did the things they needed to do. But is this something, guys, that can be overcome, and we say, oh, well, that was a weird period, and here they go with five or six in a row that they just win?
If you're asking me if the Twins are going to rebound from this thing,
yeah,
absolutely not. No. When you look at the teams that they have to now catch, Toronto, who's got a first – four in their lineup of Tulowitzki, Batista, Encarnacion, and Donaldson. Not a chance. Not with David Price and Mark Burley out there as well. And the Los Angeles Angels with the best player in baseball, Albert Pujols having a great year, Hector Santiago, and C.J. Wilson, maybe Jared Weaver coming back. Absolutely not.
They have a lot of baseball games against some really not great teams, though, the Twins. And I'm just saying maybe this is a little aberration of a struggle in the pen that can be overcome.
Twins 3-4 in the seven games since Perkins went to the All-Star game. His ERA has doubled, 1.21 up to 2.45. That's a 9.45 ERA in the meantime. Four home runs allowed in 6.2 innings. So it's clear something is not quite right there. The trouble is, you always want to wait and see with guys because the small sample sizes. Well, with closers, you're dealing in small sample sizes for an entire season. It's like a bad stretch, a bad week can ruin your entire year. And so he's probably not as good as he was in the first half. He's not as bad as he was in the second half. And if he's as good as his numbers say right now, which is a 2.5 ERA, just about a strikeout inning, that's good enough. But at some point, you got to show that rust is off. And I didn't feel last night that he showed that. And the funny thing was...
He got by last night is what I would
that
say.
That was an Eddie Gordado save.
The funny thing was that...
Perfect.
Exactly. The broadcast team was questioning why they pinch hit for Chisenhall. Because Chisenhall was 2-for-4 against Perkins in his life. And I'm just like... No, you go to the righty there. Rayburn hits lefties really well. Chisenhall doesn't. It was a great move by Francona, and it paid off, but they just couldn't scratch the run across.
Exactly. So that's good takes on that, and we're going to move on to Buxton now. A few hits in his rehab stint. You and I touched on him in segment number one. My whole thing, of course, Brandon, just to catch up to speed is – I love the hype. I get it. But three straight years of injury-prone weirdness, I just – with the way Hicks is playing, I leave him down there, don't you?
Well, the easiest thing to do would be to leave him there till September 1st and then recall
Absolutely.
Him. I don't know. Here's the thing. They're not going to cut Shane Robinson because that would look bad with his personal struggles in his life. And the Twins...
He's been productive.
He's been... Yeah, he's been fine.
Daughter is not great. It's something there, right?
Yeah, so they don't want him... They're not going to look bad. It's kind of like the Indians with Mike Avilas, too. You know, they could have traded him. They kept him. He's been at Mayo Clinic with his daughter, too. The Twins don't want to come across looking as a bad guy. You know, if they really, like, let's just say Buxton hits 450 for 2 weeks on this rehab stint and just blisters the baseball.
Which he could.
Yeah, then maybe you put him in center and you move Hicks to right. You let Torrey DH a little more often. But Eddie Rosario doesn't deserve to be benched right now either.
That's the problem.
And so this is where you kind of get to that angle where the winter is going to be interesting to see what direction they take. But you got to get there first. So it wouldn't stun me to see Buxton stay in Rochester for August. And I think there's, you know, 100% chance he'll be back as soon as the season ends. That's just the way it's going to be. But do they bring him back sooner? I just don't see it.
Dave, you mentioned that Eddie Rosario had two more triples last night.
Yep, up to eight.
Rookie record at eight and the club record?
Nine, Mr. Tony Oliva.
Wow.
In like twice as many games.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible.
It was 161 games, I believe.
Rosario's got this effortless opposite field power.
Doesn't he?
He hits that gap out in left center, and he can do it for power, too. I mean, his first home run, the first pitch of his career, was a home run to the opposite field.
He's just missing on some of those, too. I mean, some of those triples, maybe half of them could have easily been out of the park.
And that had to have been a scary moment when Brantley got clipped by the glove. He just went down.
Yeah.
He just went stiff at first. I was a little nervous, like, something bad happened here?
Scary moment for the rookie, because Tyler Holt is the one that hit him with the glove, and he's only, a big league vet of like 30 plate appearances. So, I mean, you got to be a little scared when your all-star rep gets taken out by the new guy.
Cross Nick or somebody?
Your all-star. Let's go around the horn real quick. Red jerseys, yes or no?
Yes.
No, they looked like the Red Sox.
You know what? I will say yes,
training.
But in moderation, like once a month.
I loved them.
Sundays, maybe one. I like them on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm good. I thought they were great, too.
Yeah, we got to change up the mojo. It's a good superstition thing. Wear the red, maybe, until you lose. And at least I like the alternate jersey vibe. You know, I like when the Wild wear their alternates. I like when the Wolves wear their alternates. So, like you said, in moderation.
Do we have time for frame of pitch, or are we, like, in trouble?
We got a minute and 10 seconds.
Okay,
anybody can do it.
Go ahead. You.
I got this. Aaron Hicks. He has got just a 630 OPS against right-handed pitchers. He's absolutely blitzing lefties. But keep in mind, that is a big upgrade from the last 2 years of a 500-and-some OPS against righties. He's starting to figure this thing out.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to hit righties, maybe not as good as lefties. But once that happens, you have a very nice big leaguer.
Are you framing one?
I'll frame. Well, I'm not going to frame it. I'm going to let it sail outside. It's a good stat. I think it's worth being published. Kyle Gibson, his last three starts, 8.59 ERA, three home runs allowed. In all those starts, he's allowed more fly balls than ground balls, which is anti what he likes to do. He's a ground ball pitcher. That's a bad trend. I'm concerned.
Duly noted. We'll talk to you at about 5:15.
Perfect.
And we will have, once again, the pregame show from CHS Field, Lower Town, presented by Eric's Heating and Air. This was On Deck Radio. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to Scott Hackett as well. David, beautiful work once again.
I try.
Dave Helmer, ladies and gentlemen. For Brandon Warren and Sam Ekstrom, I'm Pete Wagner. So long, everybody.